Hello.
And we are back. We've just finished recording the last episode, so we're now going to record this one. So we've got some overlapping thoughts.
Overlapping.
John and I were just talking between episodes, and I thought, you know what? Let's start, because one of the questions that I asked John was about academic research, moving forward with academic research, and I was curious to see how the academic world was how it impacted how John started like looking into things in more depth, and how it's changed, how it was easy or difficult, and what the advice or answers that are given out there, how that's impacted, like how your exposure to academics has impacted how you receive the information.
Yeah, and as I was just saying, it how I receive the information. When I first started, I felt like I had to research everything and understand every single little thing and every single little sentence because otherwise I wouldn't know enough. But as I got more used to what I was reading, I came to terms with one, the fact that I can't learn everything and I just have a limited amount of time and that's it. There will always be things I don't understand, and that is fine. And also, I gained a better understanding of like how to follow my own, I suppose, rabbit holes. Like, if I don't understand something and then I do a quick, Google of the name of the thing and it doesn't intrigue me, then I'll just leave it. If, however, something catches my eye and I'm like, oh, that's cool. How does that link to that? And how does that link to that? And how does that link to that? And how does that link to that? I will follow that rabbit hole as deep as possible because it's interesting.
So do you think you're, because I can't imagine you like looking into rabbit holes as a new thing. I would imagine you doing it beforehand. Do you think
Intentional. It's
right?
far more intentional. But I actually want to. I don't like the way that intentional is used. For me, intentional isn't like I am going, okay, so I'm going to spend X amount of time doing this research on this thing, on this, that. And like, I don't put boundaries on my intention. I am following. Well, I suppose I am following the embodiment of the information, the embodied cognition of the information of like, this is grabbing my attention. My body is reacting in a way that I know is this is cool shit. I want to know more. And so by following that gut instinct, if we want to make it less
Sciencey.
heady, and more kind of like hearty kind of thing of how it feels. If I feel like, oh wow, oh, I wonder, that is my, I know what that feels like. Once I hit that, I'm like, right, I'm gone, let's go.
That right there is what I see. That experience right there is what I see as fun, and that's literally what I do all day, every day. So when I say I research, people are like, "Oh, that's so boring." I'm like, "No," because every question I have, I'm like, "I want to know more. Tell me more." And if there's a question that I don't care about the answer, I just don't bother. And this is something that I learned first year university, which you have to learn in university. You don't have a choice, is that you can't learn everything, like you said, but you also can't research everything, because there are way far too many papers to read. And something that I have
Yes,
in my head,
there are.
something I had in my head about middle of second year that I realized, is where you see YouTube and YouTube gives you like a suggestion of papers. Hey, here's the top most viewed video, and then you go down the pages. And there are loads of videos, but you only really watch the first page videos. In academia, that first page is like 200. It's not like
Yeah.
5 or 10 videos. It's like 200 papers. So you can't be like, oh yeah, I'll just pick that, or pick, obviously depending on what you're researching. Some people, there might be like no papers. But for most fields that I'm interested in, I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably read those 400 key papers. Yeah, no. So you really have to learn how to either say no to a paper, or go down one route in one context and then try and apply it broadly, because you can't afford to consume everything in academia. When you go deep, you got to be specific. And I think that's what you meant by intention. Like you've got to say no to a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the act of saying no and like, it's not something I think about. I think often when everyone here will set your intentions, be intentional, it's like, I have to think about what I've got to do. In this context, that's not where I'm going. Like, intention, it is a gut intention. It is that full embodiment of who I am and just following what it feels like. If it feels like this, I will dive deep. If it doesn't, I won't. It is a trust versus an intention. I
Yeah.
think that might be better. Yeah.
Yeah,
Because
I
I
like
find,
that.
yeah, it's a trust, not an intention. I think that's my definition of intention in this context. It is trust.
Yeah, I think the ability to follow your body interoception, like feeling your body and be like, yeah, this is the moment I do this thing, or this is the moment I don't do this thing, is really useful. And I think it's a skill that I developed because of academia, like when it comes to like learning, physical skills obviously different.
So would you say, so my brain just went, oh, this is cool, that research is almost meditative for you?
Depending on your interpretation of meditation, yeah, because it's
Because that's my brain just went, yeah, that's what it is for me. Like, the idea of meditation from my concept is to be in contact with your body, to connect back with your body instead of being external, it's coming internal. Interoception, a way to do that is mindfulness and meditation, etc. However, what's happened is they've taken this concept and have just Americans, sorry, have blown it out of this. You must sit and meditate for 30 hours a day and just be relaxed and be this and be that and do this and just breathe incense candles, everything, and be over intentional.
throw it out the window. I can't do that.
I can't do that. I cannot sit in pure silence. I can't. I have tried. Yes, I could train myself and make myself. I don't want to.
So
What I'm doing instead is naturally developing it, trusting. I think you use a term, and I can't remember what it's called, like you're sleeping. You didn't used to use an alarm to get you up. You used to just trust your body. When your body said it was time for food, you ate food and things like that. I can't remember what you called it. It's annoying.
interoception.
No.
Right, that's the
You.
word I typically
Well,
use.
it is. It wasn't that.
Are you thinking of a term or a word?
A term, sorry.
I'm trying to think of other terms that would be appropriate. I mean, it's human recognition and self-recognition.
It's where it's like you don't try to force yourself to wake up at a certain time. You don't have an alarm. You wake up naturally. You let your body wake you up naturally. You go to sleep when you naturally want to go to sleep. I know interoception is actually what that is, but
Yeah.
you use a different self. Is it self-regulation or bioregulation or something regulation? I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. Well, it is self-regulation to an extent. I may have used that in context. I like
Can't
said,
remember. A long
I
time
said
ago.
lots of things. So when I speak about self-regulation, that's normally to do with energy management. You
Yes.
self-regulate the amount of like stuff you consume. Like, I feel hungry, so I'm going to eat, or I don't feel hungry, I'm not going to eat. That's self-regulation because it's an action. When you're sleeping, it's not self-regulation because you're not, there is no conscious thought about it. It's an unconscious thought, so it's less self-regulation and more auto-regulation. But
I think that
now,
was it.
okay,
Autoregulation. I don't know.
yeah,
I'm just gonna
well,
bug me now.
they're arguing logistics and terminology. But yeah, so I think with the interoception, that's why I don't meditate, because I don't need to. I don't feel like I need to, because meditation is, well, all of the benefits you get from meditation, I get from what I do every day, which is why I enjoy my day, which is why when I get up, I know I want to like go, and when I go to bed, I don't want to go to bed, because I listen to my body and I follow what my body is telling me to do. Embedded cognition, embodied cognition, whatever you want to call it, and because I do that all day, every day, the self-help care stuff, I don't really need it.
Yeah, and I think this also realms onto my kind of way of thinking, of like you are not broken, as you're not. We're just being told that you're broken. Now, yes, I have to be very clear. There are mental disorders. There are disorders that cause impairment. There are things that can cause a lot of damage and hurt for you. And I am not denying that for a second. I have autism. Sometimes it frickin' sucks. That is just a fact. I have depression. Sometimes it frickin' sucks. But my acceptance of that is part and parcel for me. How I have dealt with both is acceptance of that, which is not an easy thing to do, and being able to move around it. I work in cycles. That's how I work. I will go through a depressive cycle where I won't want to do anything. I will just ride that out. I know I will come out the other side because I understand how I work. But yes, there is a real point of like disorders when you are, there is something biologically wrong or something that is getting in your way. That's not what I'm referencing here. What I'm referencing is self-help, fixing you when you're broken, business advice, telling you that you should have this offer, otherwise you're not successful. Like, that is the problem.
I was going to say, it's to bring it into the answers and advice. A lot of people, when they give advice, they're giving advice from their experience, and their experience may be similar to yours, but also may be completely different to yours. So the advice they give may not be useful at all. From my experience, when people give advice, they also try and give answers rather than giving opinions and giving options, frameworks, philosophies of thought. They try and give answers to questions. So I see you smiling. So they'll come up with, I did this thing, or I did that thing. This is what worked for me. You should do this, or you should try this, which you can try it, go for it, but be aware that their context is going to be different. So my personal opinion about it would be that, okay, this is something that worked for me, but here are loads of other things that could work as well, depending on all of these contexts, which are actually like overpinned by this framework or this idea, this philosophy of thought, because a lot of the time, a lot of suggestions or techniques are built from one idea, one way of thinking, and they're sort of just derivatives of essentially the same thing.
And also, like, this is, it was interesting. So I had an experience when I did a Gestalt workshop with AOEC, which is the Association of Something or Other, I can't remember, in the UK.
Association of Something or Other, interesting.
Yeah. Association of Executive Coaches. Yeah, whatever, mate. The course that was on offer were for people who already are trained coaches. And we're looking to further their education. And when I attended that, there was a surprise from some of the people there of how much I actually could do already, considering that I have no formal qualifications, which are not really qualifications anyway, and are just things, but whatever.
Piece of paper.
Yeah. Around coaching. And the reason why is because how coaching is traditionally taught is ask questions, be distant, don't bring yourself into the conversation, typically. I do the exact opposite because that's the only way I can function. Simple. And that seems to be far more powerful. I can and do give advice when asked. Yes, I do, because sometimes it's what people need. But often, a thing that I do is give an example with the context and explain how I managed to come to terms with that or understand that. And that is often so much more powerful. And that is the kind of very simplified, the Gestalt approach, which is why I resonate with that so much, because it very much is, I am bringing the whole of myself into this conversation. When you say that, I am reacting like this. What could this mean? It's asking questions and sharing in that experiment together versus I am coachy, I tell you what to do, you go do this, you go do that. Because I don't agree with that. I don't feel that's actually very helpful at all.
Now, this may go a little bit meta, but what you've just said there, in my mind, this is how I perceive it, is, okay, you have an environment. You have an environment and you have a communication of all the things in that environment. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. And that traditionally is systems theory. The idea that you have a system that, well, you have systems inside of systems, and inside the system, there are parts and those parts communicate. And when you're coaching, you are inside a system, i.e. a relationship between your client and yourself, and then all of the other parts of that system, there are loads, and you communicate backwards and forwards. What you suggested about the traditional coaching goes goes the opposite side of systems theory, in that we are all individuals and there is a right way to do things. And that is another approach. There's another way.
Interestingly, I'm smack bang in the middle, whereas we are individuals. We each have our own thoughts, but my thoughts and your thoughts can connect to create better thoughts, or the right thoughts for you.
The different bit. Right thoughts for you. That's the different bit. Because when they're individual dependent variables, like all by themselves, there is a right way to do things. That's that perspective. There is, okay, you do this thing like this, you will get that. In systems theory suggests actually there's a bigger system, and we talk together and we're actually different. We're similar, but we're different.
Yeah. And this is something that I find really hard, especially in the productivity space, when people talk about systems theory. It doesn't sound like they're talking about systems theory.
I don't know of anyone like that actually says systems theory in their explanations. Obviously, August Bradley talks about systems thinking, but he shares not the philosophical theory behind systems theory. He shares this is how I do my organization. And he uses systems thinking as an overarching branch topic. And it does abide by systems theory, but his productivity system is a small system that is part of the larger systems, but he doesn't go to explain all of the larger systems, because yes, he's got his different hubs, his home and his vault and whatever the other things are, but they are small. I would class them as small parts of the main system, which he does explain in his videos, but those parts are also systems in themselves, which is systems theory.
Sorry, yeah, my brain has just gone and made a connection. One of the things that I struggled very much with, and I'm coming to understand this, is with my work and marketing and products that I sell, I am more interested in this kind of conversation where we're talking big picture. But something you said there made me go, oh, that made sense. Sometimes you need the smaller pieces because they're part of it. What August Bradley does, and does very well, by the way, is he has a very small, tiny focus on this little piece of the system, but doesn't discuss the bigger part of the system. I feel what I do is the exact opposite. I talk about the pieces around the system, but not the specifics, which for me is something I've been battling with for a while, and a lot of big thinkers, leaders, etc., or people who want to be leaders in the space want to do big picture things but don't want to think about the little things too. And I think for me recently I launched something around the smaller thinking pieces. I actually feel that may be something that I can't ignore, because it needs to be part of a whole versus a.
Yes. So it's not part of systems theory, but I've created a connection with it. And it's, I can't say his name, Pygott's theory of learning. I don't know how you say his name, but it's like six stages of your system. You've got you, then the microsystem, mesosystem, macro, exo, chrono, all sort of like expansions of the system. And again, like using the space analogy, which is why I have space on my wall, there are those expanding systems that are incorporated in there, but each system typically is a part of a larger system, i.e. planet, solar system, galaxy, etc. And what August does is he's diving right down into a really, really, really small part of the global system and explaining that. And it does that well. But when it comes to the broader overview of, hey, this is systems theory, it's not very well articulated how it applies. And people give loads of advice on different parts of a system, but you need to first, as the consumer, understand what systems theory is to be able to map it against anything. And two, you would then need to make the connections yourself between what they're talking about and the systems theory. And if you're doing all of that work, cognitive load theory suggests you could get overloaded depending on your prior knowledge, et cetera, et cetera. But most of the time, you won't make those connections because it won't be available to you in the sense that you don't have the amount of load because of your lack of prior knowledge to actually do it, to put an arbitrary number to it. If you've got a load of 10, a bandwidth of 10, and it requires 15 bandwidth to understand what systems theory is, you don't have the load to think about that. So you're not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, if we bring this back to the namesake of this podcast, that's why people hate Notion or don't get it. And that's why templates suck.
Yep.
Because I'm giving you a single context with a template, as is every single creator out there who makes templates, and you're not given the overarching systems thinking behind it. The reason why my templates are not $10 or $3 or whatever is because I don't just give you the template, because frankly, I do not think that that is enough. There is also the theoretical underpinning and my contexts that are incredibly important as it pertains to actually getting the bigger picture of using Notion or Obsidian or Rome. Click up. That one's debatable. But like using these tools which give you...
They're all debatable.
You know, like when it comes to system theory, when it comes to tools like Asana and what's the task manager one called?
Todoist.
When it comes to things like that, you don't need the system theoretical background because that's done for you. That's built into the system itself. Do you agree with that one? Because you actually use Todoist. You don't necessarily have to think about it anywhere near as much.
I was going to say, yeah, add that bit because you still need to think about it. Like, what do you have projects? Don't you have projects? Do you have folders? Do you have it in one? Is it an inbox? Like, there is still an element of thinking. It's just because of the design of the application, there is less needed most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time is less needed. And
I think that comes down to the restrictions and barriers and requirements built in by the app. The apps that have less restrictions require more thinking naturally. And obviously Obsidian, Notion, Rome have less restrictions, therefore more flexibility and more thinking required.
Yeah.
You were going to say something, I butted in, or were you?
That you pretty much summarized that. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Nice. The point I want to move towards, so we've got like answers and advice as the title, and tips, tricks, frameworks, theories, and facts. They're the words that I wrote down, and the reason I wrote them down is, yeah, I know you don't like tips and tricks. Tips and tricks, I think we've spoken about before, can be useful if the tip and trick is in the context that you want the tip and trick in. Like, how do I use this hotkey shortcut? There you go, that's a tip. It's also classed as a trick. And it's useful if you're in the same tool that the shortcut's being used in, of course. But when it comes to tips and tricks on a framework or on a theory, I think that's where they become less useful. So relating it to what we were talking about, if you're giving advances or advice about a more higher level thinking, higher order thinking, if that's the terms you want to use,
I don't want to use that term.
I don't So I'll explain why, because I said in the last episode I won't explain it. Higher order thinking suggests there's a hierarchy of your level of thinking, which means there is lower order thinking and higher order thinking, which means if there's a hierarchy, it means something is better than something else or worse than something else. But I don't like that at all. So if we take out the better or worse, there's lower and higher. Is there shallow and low depth? Well, is again, shallow and low depth. Typically, shallow is worse than higher, like more depth. But again, there's no better or worse. So why is it a hierarchy? Why is there something above something else? Surely it should just be level play. But yeah, that's my personal irritation with it.
Yeah, I agree.
So this higher, whatever you want to call it, order thinking, because there's no like appropriate term that's opposite to it at the moment. Working on that. So this thinking that's much more broad, when you try and attach advice or answers to it, you're trying to attach like tips and tricks to frameworks, broad thinking to broad theories that, to be frank, the theories and hypothesis haven't been proven. So how can you give a tip or trick to something that hasn't been proven right yet? And most of the time we can't prove it right because it's a theory or a hypothesis in social science. How can you give a tip and trick to something that isn't right or wrong?
Yeah.
You just can't do it in my head. Like it's not possible.
There just isn't an answer. There are just more questions, which I think is the point. And there's no right question or wrong question or this or that. It is just a question. And often what is missed is we try to use tips and tricks and facts in things that don't actually fit within the actual conversation and the framework, which what actually is a framework?
Good question. So I wasn't actually sure whether you'd roughly get it, but essentially a theory is the underpinning of a methodology, and a methodology is essentially a framework. So the theory of systems theory is, hey, there's this theory of how we think. And then a framework could be, okay, this is how we're going to use systems theory. So you could argue that Zettelkasten is a framework for applying systems theory in note-taking. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you can have multiple frameworks that underpin the same theory, but the frameworks could actually disagree. Perfect example in organization is obviously Para, GTD, and the rest of all the other PPV and Horizon, the rest of them. They're all frameworks underpinned by a theory, but that theory could then have multiple frameworks. And because all of us are different, most of the time we're all going to have different frameworks in academia because some stupid reason everyone's like, I'm not going to use your framework. I'm going to come up with my own one, and I'm going to change the names of all the sections, copy almost exactly the same thing and add more complicated words on it. Why? What's the point? It's the same effing thing. I'm talking about academia, but obviously you could apply this to other contexts as well, maybe. John's giggling away there.
It's because it's just the productivity spaces. It's a PPV, Para, same thing.
Yeah, because it's the same theory.
Yeah.
It's literally the same theory, just different framework. And yeah, fine, teach your framework, but the framework that you're using likely isn't going to work to the framework other people are using. They may take parts of it, but the framework is a system, and the parts that build up the system might be useful in your framework or not. Which, again, I expressed in my Zettelkasten video where I explain systems theory, how if you take the systems theory approach, which most people do in the productivity space, whether they know it or not, most of them do, then you can take parts from other people's framework or system, but you need to actually apply it in your system, in your framework, to see if it works for you.
Yeah.
What I want to say about facts is I think this comes down to type of knowledge, whether it's procedural, i.e. like things that you know or things that you do. The factual information, the more factual information anyway, because we can't know everything for truth, but the more factual information is where tips and tricks can be useful, I think. But the more the spectrum leads towards theory over fact, the less the tips and tricks become useful and the more frameworks become useful. And obviously, the further away you move from, like, the closer to theory you get and the further away from facts you get, the less useful frameworks become. So I see it as a spectrum: theory, facts, and you've got sort of like tips and tricks down here quite close to facts, and you've got frameworks sort of in the middle, and then you've got philosophy and theory all the way down the other end. I think the further away you move from fact, the further away you move from useful tips, tricks, and frameworks, etc. But it takes time to move away from facts and towards theory.
Yeah And I think often what can happen is people take the philosophies as facts.
Yeah.
And portray them as, this is a fact. You need a second brain. You need to use Notion. You need to have a social media presence. You need to do this. You need to do that. No, I don't. Do I want to?
I agree. I don't disagree. But I would take that a little bit further. Most of the assumptions of those are built on theories that are also assumed as fact. This may trigger some people. Working memory is not fact. We don't know we have a working memory. It's a theory. And there are multiple theories about how working memory works.
Oh my God, are we going to go there again? Because my brain exploded when you start talking about that with me. I'm just like...
No, I'm just saying that... Fuck. Yeah, I'm not going to go down there because it's quite a deep hole. But working memory is a theory, but it's assumed that we have a working memory and how we use working memory. And so frameworks are built from it. Like all the things you've just mentioned, they're built from the assumption we have a working memory and we have a long-term memory, and that's how memory works.
But that's, and that our brains know what we need.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a theory. Extended cognition is obviously a theory that doesn't directly attack it, but it assumes that cognition isn't just in your brain.
Yeah.
And we've explored that, which is why I brought that one up. Obviously, there are other approaches that are different.
Every single time you go there, I'm like, I can't. I will lose. I know I'm going to lose literally a month to this if I even start touching it. I'm already losing enough time with embodied cognition and how that fits into business and everything. So I'm like, stop. I am exerting the minutia of self-control that I have to not dive into that yet and put it in my Obsidian to go deep dive later.
I was going to say, you could just read the conclusions in the Mohs of the papers that I'm reading and be like, oh, that's cool.
Yes, please. Yeah, but you know me. I'm going to read the conclusions of the Mohs and go, oh, cool. Well, let me look into that more. Boop.
Yeah. I was going to say, you could watch the videos that come out, but it'd be the same result. You go, oh, that's really annoying now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was just bringing to light that even the things that we think, oh yeah, it must be true. Everyone talks about it because working memory is spoken about literally everywhere, cognitive psychology and cognitive science, but it's a theory. It's not a fact. So how you interpret information, because you see it on the news all the time. Oh yeah, I can't remember that. I'm overloaded. It's assuming working memory is true and that you're overloading your working memory.
The book, The Extended Mind, I think it's Annie Murphy Paul. Yeah.
Yep.
Had a quote in there. As a comedian, Emo Phillips has remarked, I used to think that the brain was the most wonderful organ in my body. Then I realized he was telling me this. And that, I think, sums up what you just said quite deliciously. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That book. Exactly.
Like, that book's so good. For people who want to dive deeper into this, like, it's not surface level enough. You're going to want to sit with it for a bit. I was about to say this is surface level. It's not.
It's the surface as you're going to get.
Yeah, with embodied cognition. It's as high level as you can possibly get without breaking your brain if you're not used to it.
I mean, for those that are interested, obviously you can go into my Obsidian Publish, and there are a couple of short videos on YouTube with Andy Clark and David talking about extended cognition. And that's, I think they are quite, I was going to say, they are probably quite nice places to dive into. But yeah, so when it comes to this sort of like theory versus fact, advice, answers, when it comes to sharing this conversation, because I won't say sharing advice, sharing this conversation and sharing the experiences, how would you personally suggest people look at consuming the sort of things? Because obviously if people are giving answers, how do you then change the answer into something that you can use?
Embodied cognition, interoception.
Okay, stop using my buzzwords and explain it. You're meant to be the one that explains stuff. I'm the one that brings in complicated terms.
All right. It is a.
You can't take the smart person away from me.
It genuinely is. Okay, if we translate that into the best, most gen pop possible.
I was going to say, obviously, people listening to this one haven't necessarily heard the last one.
One, go watch the last one and listen, whichever way you prefer to consume this. Listen or watch the previous one, so then you can get a little bit more depth and context, because you may want it. But it's trust and gut. It's that gut instinct. I think that's the best way of that, from my interpretation of what interoception is. It's a gut instinct. It's that utter, complete trust in something that you can't fully understand yet. How does that track for you? Because I think that's the best way I've been able to explain it as simply as possible without going really deep. It's that gut sensation. It's that, ooh, this feels really exciting, I want to explore it, which is what I touched on either in this one or the last one. Last we one. Recorded two. In the last one, of that when I follow a rabbit hole because I'm excited, I know that is because I have seen the bits in the past, I've noted down and become more aware of my cues and what fascinates me. So it's awareness. It genuinely is as simple as just awareness, and not forced awareness. This is me talking about this so that I can think about that. No, it's not necessarily. Okay, this one might be a hot topic. Reflection and awareness are not the same thing. I don't believe that they are the same thing. Good, I'm glad you're nodding. I'm just like, ooh! Reflection is a tool to help you get to awareness. Can be. Not sure I like that one 100%, but...
Were you looking at me for confirmation?
No, I was kind of thinking in myself as well, whether I believe in that. And then I had an instant gut reaction of, nah, that's not quite right.
That's one of those times where I think learning through speaking is useful, which is why I do my audio journal, because you think things in your head, but when you actually say them, your body, because you've said something, you've made it physical rather than mental, your body has a reaction and you go, hold on, that doesn't sit right with me, is a saying that's most probably familiar. And when it doesn't sit right with you, typically it's your unconscious mind, however you want to define that and whatever that means to you. But it's your unconscious mind recognizing a connection or lack of connection between what you've said and your body is reacting because of it. And that could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing, but it means that there is something there that you're not quite comfortable with for whatever reason.
Yeah. So you're welcome. That was completely planned. For people who are watching, who are listening, not watching, that was a face of, yeah, right. the expression was, yeah, no, not really. It's interesting. I as I'm exploring more of embodied cognition and that extended cognition, because they keep using that quite interchangeably and it's very frustrating. And interception.
I mean, there's four.
I know. And they get used interchangeably, and I'm still like not quite like, which one am I using? Is that the right one? I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to, so extended and embedded are essentially the same thing, except embedded, don't believe that things outside of the body is 100% cognitive or mental. So yeah. Embedded basically say that the book or the app, the tool, it contributes to cognition, but it doesn't have cognitive properties, so isn't cognitive or mental. So it's more of a legal situation, really, legal ethical situation with how I speak about it in the video. Embodied is, again, taking that embodied approach to cognitive properties, but it's literally the physical stuff. It doesn't say things outside of the body have cognitive properties at all. It's just that is completely different. So like using your fingers to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like that's embodied cognition. It's also an example of embedded and extended cognition. So all three of them agree that it's part of cognition, but they all disagree as to what percentage that counts towards cognition.
So basically for everyone who isn't us, they're pretty interchangeable. They're just slightly different contexts.
That have legal and ethical implications about how they're applied. Yeah, so just don't speak to someone that researches or has researched this philosophy and you'll be fine.
Which most people who work with me don't. If you watch this, you probably will, and we will have a lovely conversation, and I cannot wait for it.
something that sprang to mind when you were talking about awareness and reflection was the film Inside Out.
Love that song.
For those that haven't seen it, basically it's an example.
For those who haven't seen it, pause this right now and go bloody watch it. Anyway, carry on.
Basically, there are loads of characters and people inside of the girl's head, and they represent certain feelings and emotions, anger, and all the other different things. And the way I see the gut feeling is literally like an alarm bell going on, and everyone being confused, like, why? What's going on? What's happening? And there is something going on, but no one really knows why or what's going on. That's how I see it in my head. But you can become angry because you don't understand why the alarm is there. Like, why don't I agree with this? There's something there. And then you can make yourself feel certain things. That's how I see the gut reaction. It's an alarm. You're like, why is it going off? I don't get it.
And And I think it's, from my experience, the best things I've had are when I've just leant into it and just gone, okay, I don't get this. What have you got to tell me? Tell me more. I'll just wait. I'm good. I can wait for you. Let's go play with that idea. And often it comes up. So let's make this very like tangible in business, because it's where I work. It's like business models, offers, things that you want to do. For me, a lot of I'm really interested in working with big, like, kind of bigger people, of like talking to big names and having bigger conversations, and helping you.
When you say bigger people, are you talking popularity or finances or company size?
It's kind of like people with more power, I suppose, is, I think, the best way of putting it. Yeah, because you can have people who are small but have a lot of maybe influence, power and influence, you know, an interchangeable sort of maybe. That's, I'm interested in having more of those conversations. But at the same time, I have this conflict of like, I want to help people who are at the same level or around me, because often the way of helping more people reach power is being able to trust your instincts and trust your gut and interoception and all of that stuff helps you gain more power over yourself and understanding and develop your own power and develop your own leadership style. And I'm interested in talking to more leaders who are leaning into that. But there are people who want tactical and need tactical help to help them reach their next stage. And a lot of conflict has been occurring for me right now around, I have a limited amount of time. I can't support everyone, and I'm aware of that. But I want to. And so it's what I've been thinking about is, can I the gut reaction is yes, of course I can, because there are ways of doing so, but I need to set the priorities that match where I want to go. And that is a gut thing. So I have what I'm calling the Simplicity Hub that will be designed. It's kind of almost a side business, even though it's not, which allows people to play with ideas, to experiment, to gain trust in themselves, and also have real, create the space to think like, kind of like we do to a certain degree. Because often for business owners, like, have the space to, I didn't like what I said there, have more space for things like interoception, for the idea of connecting with oneself, understanding oneself better, being able to develop themselves and their business to fit them, and that bigger systems theory philosophy. Because so many people can't even hit the philosophy because their brains are so full and the load is from really tiny tactical things, which frankly, because of my experience, I can solve like that and does not require that much effort. There is a desire to help people do that so that they can actually move forward and develop their, you know, higher philosophy. I can't think of the right word, that I don't like that one, but that ability to have more agency, have more trust in their stuff. Once their ducks are in a row to a certain degree, using tips and tricks, maybe using techniques a little bit, then it allows them to reach that, because the cognitive load has gone down, because they, that costs them 10 and what they have is 15, using your analogy from earlier. But the thing is this bigger picture stuff requires 15 and requires your full attention, but 10 of it is gone. And so you're just like, no, I can't deal with this. It's just like, that's just nonsense, psycho babble bollocks. It's not, it's real, it's human. But because you the load is too high, you dismiss something that is ununderstandable, etc., etc. And that's where I've been in the past. And so from a business perspective, it makes sense for me to help people on this side and that side at the same time, because it helps them reach leadership positions in a small way. And I just find that really, really fascinating and have completely lost the point. But it was a good verbal processing time. Thank you very much.
So a couple of terms: motivational climate, psychological safety.
Yeah, I've done either of those yet.
Self-efficacy and personal autonomy. They're the four very broad concepts that come to mind. So what essentially you're looking to do is build up a motivational climate for individuals that has an element of psychological safety for them to explore themselves, to help them improve their ability to be personally autonomous with their work and their thinking, to improve self-efficacy.
They are. You used much bigger words, but summarized it perfectly.
That's what the bigger words are for, because they're concepts. But because they're concepts, if you don't understand all of the stuff behind it, like you eloquently put, that one word to me is one. Self-efficacy to me mentally represents one. To someone else, it could represent 50, because they have no idea what any of that means. And if you've got a bandwidth of 10, and for me it's one, well, I've used 1/10. And for the person that it's 50, yeah, no chance. That's the risk of using those concepts and building up an environment where you can break down those things. So self-efficacy, I don't get that, break it down. So you do break it down into all its little parts because of the environment that you've built. So instead of it being 50, well, now it's 5 10s. Yeah. And you've got a bandwidth of 10, so you can explore the 10, that turns into a 1. Explore another 10, turns into a 1. Eventually, it'll turn into a 5. And then once you've got all of that, it turns into a 1. That's literally learning through cognitive load and development. Obviously, that takes time. It's not something that's very quick, unless you get a light bulb moment. And that typically, the light bulb moments using this analogy is when it goes from a 10 to a 1 or a 50 to a 5.
Yeah.
and you're like, yeah, I get it. And instead of having to spend all that energy and effort, it's like, oh no, it's just there. Yeah, I get that now. That's the light bulb moment.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. I have so many thoughts on that. I'm just like, oh, yay. Some reflections are happening.
Evaluations or reflections?
Now we're getting perish. Evaluations, yeah. So what happened just then, just because this is lovely and meta and I'm having way too much fun with this, is that excitement I just felt will lead me to research all of those things more. Because I'm following the, like, my body had an actual reaction that was joy and excitement and slight nervousness, but that's good because nerves and excitement kind of coexist beautifully. And it's like, that is embodied cognition. And, well, no, interoception, sorry. I'm not careful, I use the wrong...
It's an example of embodied cognition using interoception.
That's it, what he said. See, I'm now too excited, so I'm just going to shut up and let you talk for a bit.
What do you mean too excited? No, that's the perfect time to talk. When you just, like that right there, whenever I was coaching kids sport, whenever they got excited about learning something was when I was like, do it, just keep going. Yes, they'd mess up, make loads of mistakes, but that's what I want. Like, I want them to be in an environment where they can make tons of mistakes, make themselves look stupid, answer stupid questions, get things all wrong, but they're excited about what they're learning.
Yeah.
And then when they look back at it, they go, oh, wait, no, that was wrong. Or they've done it so many times, making a mistake. I'm like, I'm sick of saying the same thing again. I'm going to say it right this time. And so, yeah, I want you to talk about those things because I'm curious to see what comes out of your head, because the connections you make will be different to what I have.
There are so many thoughts that they're not coming to mind. My brain is going in multiple different directions, excited directions of like psychological safety and how that can be implemented into the business and how actually the business that I'm building can be developed from psychological safety and motivational climate, and the tools that I use will represent that. I've been looking into a tool called Experiencify for courses, which has a... I don't know, the sales page is gamification heavy, which is just a tool, and it's not talking about it in the way that I care about, which is personalization, giving people the permission to feel, well, from my very limited understanding of psychological safety, what I would use Experiencify for is giving them safety. It's the podcast that I launched was around safety. It makes them feel safe to think about these ideas and not feel stupid. A lot of what I do, every single client I've ever spoken to, I make them feel safe, even though I'm talking about massive concepts. And I think that's the representation that I've got from our podcast as well. There is that beautiful balance between you and I of like, you are the academic. I am not an academic. Okay, fine. I am not a traditional academic. You come from an academic background. I do not. I come from a I want to know all the things background. from basically, I don't like the concept too much, but a high functioning background where my brain doesn't just shush. And coming to terms with the fact that my brain does work really fast and being able to use that is really interesting. Of like the psychological safety of it's okay. And thank you for mentioning that. Of like, yes, go and talk about it. Because often in my own context, I didn't. Because most people that I speak to don't understand it, and there's not safety for them to understand it. So I don't feel safe talking about it. Even though it's just an idea. And so my thoughts of like how I'll incorporate this into my business is the idea that if I can provide safe spaces within a context that fits them, such as how to set up, you know, Descript to do podcasts and not spend 12 hours a day, that is less of a distraction and more of a, here, I am leading you. I am helping you get to where you want to be. Because I honestly feel that most people, correct me if I'm wrong, want more self-efficacy. Most people want that feeling that they're doing something that's beyond themselves. And that feeling of like, yeah, this is awesome. And when the world is kind of like, no, you're broken. You need to buy this and fix yourself. You need to do this. You need to do. And frankly, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is very much true. This is how we're taught to, from someone who has dived into marketing in business and in many things. And you can just see it. Everything is about manipulation. It's not a theory thing. What? Conspiracy theory. It is very exciting. And so giving that space. Oh, this is such a fun episode. My brain's just like going, oh, so many things to say. Words don't work anymore, which isn't great in a podcast. People listening, go and watch. I think my face is saying more than everything I'm doing is.
So I'm gonna like step in for a second. I'm gonna ask one question out of curiosity, and I think it would be useful for listeners as well. What was going through your head when you were talking? Like, were you worried about what you were saying? Were you being really specific about how you said things? What were your gut feelings about what you were saying?
So at first it was that concern that saying, because this is a specific context of a podcast, making sure there was value in there, that was important. That something that I was saying, actually, often the thoughts in my head are not what comes out because I'm translating them. I have that translation filter in between what I'm thinking and what I say to allow more people to feel safe hearing it, so to speak. And then it was like, is this actually what I'm thinking? Do I actually believe this? I am constantly in my head. There is two sides to me. There is one side that is having the thoughts, and there's the other side that is critiquing every single thing I say. And not in a way of like, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're thick. Sometimes it is, yes. But it's like, is that actually what you believe? Is that actually true? Is that true just for you? Is that just a concept that you've created? Is that based on this? Is that based on that? Why are you thinking like that? It's that critique rather than criticism, actually. I think critique is a better word, of how I think. And that's what my brain does every single second of every single day.
What's interesting to me is, obviously, I have a depth of understanding about all the topics that you've just spoken about, and I could pick apart loads of different things, but there'd be no point because who's going to benefit from that? And almost everything that you said, all of the assumptions that you made are true to an extent.
Yeah.
And the questions that you will gather from the things that you've spoken about, I'm going to guess you will then go and explore. And the fact that you've just had to recall, active recall right there, recall all of those words means...
Natural ones, no flashcards. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Means you're more likely to remember it in future because you'll associate those words with this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had to work really hard to recall everything.
And I'm going to call you out just a little bit. You put in self-efficacy there. And I don't know what, like, this is how it came across. You were like, oh, I've remembered that word. I need to say it. I'm just going to say the word. That's how it came across. Yeah.
A little bit. I was trying to figure out my understanding of that word and then matching it against the conversation, because I know you have a deeper understanding. So I was using that and seeing if that was the right context and testing it. And I realized it wasn't the right context. Because it didn't feel like the right context.
But you don't quite know why yet.
But exactly.
Exactly. And those are the questions that, for me, I'd be like, that didn't quite work. Why didn't that work? And then I go and explore it.
Basically. So
maybe to speed up the research a little bit, the way you used it, the way you use self-efficacy is actually personal autonomy. So.
Yeah. That actually, I'm just like, oh, yes. And that is from someone who's done no research. It was a, so here we go again. Gut response to that was yes. It was not like it was an instant yes. It felt better. Mm. It wasn't the fact that, you know, not that I don't trust you, of course, but you could have told me that and I wouldn't have believed you, and then I would go and research myself and find out you're correct. But it was, you said that, my response was, no, that sounds, that feels better. That feels right. It seems right.
Yeah. And hopefully you felt safe enough in the environment just to explore.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. So what I did is I built up a motivational climate by supporting the individual and gave a safe space, even though the space technically isn't safe because it's public. But again, that's your perception of what safe is. And again, you can go and explore that in your own time, because obviously perception of safety comes into psychological safety.
Oh, just like, oh, that's I'm gonna put that down so that I can actually be present in the conversation. Perception of safety. Thank you.
Well, I was thinking we're probably going to be closing it out fairly soon, because I mean,
we've covered
answers and advice, and we've gone into, I would say, quite a bit of depth into how you could use some of those frameworks supported by theory. I'm quite happy to close it out, because I enjoyed the conversation. Don't know about you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Don't remember half of it, but yes.
That is a perfect example of cognitive load, where you've gone, I'm thinking about this thing. Oh, this is a new thing. I need to either get rid of something or not pay attention. And because you've chosen to pay attention, you've got rid of the thing. Assuming working memory is a actual thing.
Don't start there. Ecological data, just stop it. I'm just like, every time I look at it, I'm like, yeah, I know you want to come in here, but like, I know you're going to be like a 15 or a 20 and I'm still on 10.
Yeah, no. Maybe more like 100. Ecological dynamics is like 100. If systems theory is still a challenge, you got a way to go, because systems theory is a part of complexity theory. Complexity theory is
complexity theory is just so much fun. I'm reading a book on that at the moment. I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, and then complexity theory obviously is where the dynamical systems come in. But then you have ecological psychology, which confronts all aspects of cognitive psychology. And then you basically mash those together into ecological dynamics. So, yeah, it's...
I'm just going to read your mouse, because I'm just like, thank you.
Yeah, the mouse are obviously practical examples of how they've used things in like studies. So they basically like brought it all down into one small thing. Like, oh, yeah, I understand that context. And then you can start associating and creating those connections. So building out those parts, shallow hierarchy of thinking, whatever you want to call it, low level, blah, blah, blah. The entry. And then you start moving up or forwards.
Yeah. So fun. Or backwards or multidimensionally.
That's what I would prefer. But I mean, that's too abstract for these cognitive scientists, unfortunately. They need hierarchies.
Yeah. I'm boring.
Yeah. But yeah, next week, no idea what the episode is because I ain't planned that out yet. So have a good week and see you then.
Bye.